Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat is a marvelous talking daf, Bav Pehe, and have your mouth ready for some serious activity because we are talking about one of the world's famous sugyot, which is the sugya of Aruga. And we are holding, how about if we just review before I tell you what we're holding? I think we got a few lines down. We got one line down, actually. Minolan is where we're holding on the second line. But I'd like to review with you the issues. So the Mishnah began by telling us that if you have an aruga that is 6x6, you can plant 5 different minimini. And the reason that this is here is because it's another one of the Ramazan that we found in the Pasuk, where the Navi lists 5 different words meaning bringing forth fruit. And we know, said the Gemara yesterday, that that can take place in an aruga that is 6x6 tefachim, because the Chachamim estimated what mixing means in terms of sharing nourishment in a piece of ground. Now, as we saw yesterday, if we're going to come on to the Rabbanan, I mean, you can ask, look, Mamanavshach, I mean, if the Rabbanan were Koveya, then what does it have to do with a specific shear of aruga? Just tell us the distance between the plants that is necessary. And if the distance between the plants is what's necessary, then what is the meaning of an aruga particularly? It doesn't seem to be anything that's being said over here. If what you need to tell me is there's 3 tefachim necessary between one plant and the next in order for there not to be a sharing of nourishments, then that's what you should say. Obviously, that's not what it's saying. As Rashi points out, if it was saying that, first of all, if that were true, then in an aruga, you could have 9 different plants. Because you could still maintain 3 tefachim, and the 3 tefachim would include the area of the plant itself on either edge. You could easily maintain 3 tefachim between each plant and have 3 lines of 3 within an area of 6x6. So that cannot be the point. What, therefore, is the point if talking about an aruga? One of the central themes of Kilayim, in terms of Kilo Yisroel, is shapes. Heker. Now, there's different ways of making heker. You could put a fence between things. If you put a fence between things, then the fence clearly defines the fields as being different. You're going to say, but under the fence, they're still nourishing. The plants are being nourished from the same ground, but that's not the definition of Kilayim. It also has to appear mixed. So that what we must be talking about is that an aruga, as a particular, well-defined agricultural shape for a vegetable garden, allows you to get away with things that you wouldn't get away with just planting plants randomly. So if you plant them randomly, then as long as you keep 3 tefachim between each plant, there's not a problem. But that is an extremely inefficient way to go about planting different species. The chiddush of the Mishnah is that if you put the 2 things together, in other words, if you first define how much of an area could allow you without its being technically me'urvav, what type of area would allow you to plant many different things in it? Well, once you get to 6x6, you're talking about maybe as many as 9 different species. So in other words, an area of 6x6 is clearly not considered to be a mixed, by definition, a mixed piece of land where everything is growing together. Now, once that's true, we also have the concept of a space that is miyuchad for an agricultural shape. And because of that, what we're going to let you do, because of this graphic definition of aruga, what we're going to let you do, for starters, and we're going to see that this is going to get far more kal than we think. Right now, what we're going to let you do is maintain 3 tefachim as a general rule, but will allow you to get very close on the edges, because since it's so well defined, the shape of the aruga and the different pieces that are going down the sides is enough to distinguish the areas to tell us that they're not mixed, even though technically they may be nourishing from the same ground each other. So what we can do, therefore, with this shape, and this is the value of the aruga, is that we can have 1 line on each side that goes all along the line, as long as it doesn't hit the very edge, because once it hits the very edge, it's going to bump into the piece on the other side, and that will be really mixed. But if we leave just that last tefach clear, on top and on bottom, so to speak, then we have a very well-utilized line all along the edge. If we put 1 thing right in the middle, 1 little cabbage right in the middle, then we've got 3 tefachim on all sides. So we don't have to worry about the fact that the edges have come in close to each other because they're well defined. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to use Rashi's pshat throughout the sugya because he has an extremely simple and straightforward pshat to a very, very complex sugya. So we take a look at our first drawing, which is the Rashi on Pedalet Amud Beit. There you go. You have a very simple description of a single plant in the middle, which allows you three tefachim to each of the sides. We're assuming right now that the side is only one line long, and that way you have a full three tefachim between that middle piece and any of the sides, because the three tefachim include the area of one plant. And that way we have no problem, despite the fact that the lines almost touch in the corner, but you'll see that the last tefach is left free, and as Rashi has it, it's not a very well done drawing, but that's what it's supposed to be, then we don't have a problem. Now, the point is, however, that the pasuk that we brought yesterday, which is Merames to five different species, does not mention any size. I mean, maybe it's five different species within an acre. I mean, how do you know it means in a little aruga of six tefachim? So yesterday we said, and let's start the page on the top again, V'kinlu l'rabbanan b'chamisha b'shita lo yanki me'adav. The Rabbanan have established that the area of the, and this is a scientific establishment, it's not that we have a Kabbalah about this, the Rabbanan have established that five different plants within an area of six tefachim are not ipso facto binyonic from one another. Asks the Gemara today a fascinating question. How do you know that you have a right to rely on the definitions that come from a non-Torah perspective? How do you know that you have a right to rely on them and to say that halakhically this is a meaningful description? I mean, you're basically picking it out of a hat. Are you such a bucky that we can rely on your analysis of the actual facts on the ground, literally here? We're talking about the botany. Is this reliable? Says the Gemara, it is indeed, and you don't have to be Jewish to be a chacham either. The Amar Rav Kiva Rava, Amar Rav Yochanan, my dechtiv. What is the meaning of the pasuk? Lo tasig v'ureyaka asher gavlu rishonim. What does that mean, asher gavlu rishonim? I mean, yes, the simple meaning of the pasuk is don't move a land boundary that had been given to you from the time of Knesset Haaretz. But I mean, this is a general pasuk. It doesn't only refer to that kind of thing. Any type of stealing in that fashion would be hasagat bo. So why would we say asher gavlu rishonim? Why is it only asher gavlu rishonim? I mean, any time a guy buys land or whatever, it doesn't have to go all the way back to Knesset Haaretz, does it? Therefore, says the Gemara, the meaning of asher gavlu rishonim, explains Rabbi Yochanan, is the gvul shegavlu rishonim, the areas that were defined by the early settlers before the Jews even got to Israel. Lo tasik, what is that referring to? My gavlu rishonim, look, basically, before we got to this area, it says, Ela b'nei Seir ha-chori yoshvei ha-aretz. Now, what is that supposed to mean? The chori lived on the earth, and I suppose everybody else lives in orbiting space satellites. I mean, apparently, the rest of humanity lives in the Rakia. Kulei Am is yoshvei Rakia, and these poor guys were left behind on a nuclear-devastated earth. Is that what it means? Ela, what it means is these were the real dwellers of the earth. They were hobbits. And they could basically tell you how you became Yeshuvah Shaharetz. These people were so bucky that they could actually, as we'll see, taste or smell, and were very, very sensitive to the chemical composition of the soil. And they would tell you, you see this little area here, 1 yard long, a malokana is 1 meter. This is perfect for growing olives. And then they point somewhere else. Right here, this next meter, that point is perfect for planting grapes. You see this one? This is perfect for planting figs. And then they would not only do this by some type of external measurement, but they were called chori. Why were they called chori? Chori is a lotion of nostrils. And that's because their nostrils were very sensitive. Shemerichim et haaretz, they could sniff the ground, and they could tell you what it's good for. And they were also called chivi. Chivi is a lashon of a snake. Why were they called chivi? Tosfos says this is not the chivi over the b'shiva amadim, because we're being dorish here, the story of B'nai Seir, Hachori. So therefore, the chivi is a different way of referring, like Sivon Achivi. Now, he wasn't from the chivi of the shiva amadim. So this is just another lashon of chivi, referring to B'nai Seir. And they're called chivi. Amr Popo show you to animet aretz kechivia. The same way that snakes make it through the earth, And that's why we call them a Thievi. And they could actually taste the earth. And the sensitivity is such that the Torah uses them to tell you, the way Rashi understands it, is to tell you, if you have a field, do not plant it in such a way that you will be leaching nourishments from the next field. Because after all, they used to know, when they weren't a bunch of industrial agriculturalists, but they actually cared about the earth, they could tell you precisely where you could plant and mind your own business. And that's the remez to Gavlu Rishonim. But what we see from there is that the Torah takes very seriously the sensitivity that grows to the actual composition of the soil. Therefore, once the Rabbanan tell you that an aruga is the area that it's suitable to say that you don't have ipso facto mixing, even though you have five different species within this area, then you can start looking at the graphical construct from the outside to see whether it looks like it's mixed or not. And that explains it. Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, no, that's not why they were called chori. I mean, if they could taste the earth, they don't need to sniff, do they? They're called chori because they were nasu b'nei chorin minichseihem. They were made free of their property, meaning they were dumped out by b'nei Esav. Now they don't have to worry about paying their mortgage anymore because they were thrown out of the country. So just like we say, yatsa ploni naki minichasav, ubal ashar naki, which is a nice way of saying free and clear. You got nothing stripped clean. Yeah, nothing, exactly. Nothing to worry about. Okay. Omer Vaz, I want you to understand something. We know that a typical garden patch has a gvul around it. And therefore, when we're talking about an aruga, I do not want you to think that when we're talking about an aruga of shisha, it includes the regular walking area, which we'll see is one tefach wide. And you need that in order to be able to have access without trampling your plants. So when you're making, let's say you'd have a large field like this, you would make arugot. Each aruga would be provided with an area that you could walk along for watering, weeding, and so on, which is wide enough for your feet to walk along without trampling. Now, don't think that the shear of an aruga means that basically the area that is planted is really 4x4, except that we have an additional tefach on either side for you to walk on. That is not true, because the implications of that would be that two tefachim between each type of plant would be sufficient for distance, but it's not. You need three tefachim. And therefore, the basic structure of an aruga, before we get to the way that we can be semif on our graphics, the basic structure is each plant is separated from any other plant by three tefachim. So if that's the case, you're going to need an extra tefach on the outside of this aruga if you want a walking area. But this aruga is a purely garden patch. Then you'll worry about access to your garden patch, okay? Tanyanami Achi, and in fact a Braita confirms this, aruga tocha shisha. The inside of the aruga, the part that's planted is 6x6, then you're going to need an area around it if you want to get around it. And what is the typical shear of a gvulot? Gvulot ha'bekama? Kiritznan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, rochav kimole rochav parsa. As wide as a foot, which is not the length of a foot, which is the English word foot, but the Hebrew word foot, which is a tefach, actually. The only reason we use foot here is because we want you to understand the basis of it. We could have said a tefach, but that would mean that you're walking on your head when you go and take care of your garden, which would mean you'd have to hold the hose in your feet, which is really quite a feat. So because of that, it's better to do it the other way. So we call it a parsa. Now, of course, this raises a very important point. Who cares? Maybe there's nothing around the aruga. Why do you need to tell me the distance that is necessary for the aruga? Is this aruga floating in space that I need to know how much area I have to walk around it? I mean, what, does this make any sense? Here you are in your backyard, next to your swing set. You've got a little garden patch, and you're telling me, oh, but make sure you have a tefach around it. I don't need to know that, do I? Unless what we're talking about is an aruga that is part of a massive field of these arugot stacked one next to the other. Then we need to know how much distance is necessary between each aruga and the next in order to allow you to plant this entire area with arugot. That's what it sounds like, because otherwise, what's the point? The thing is, though, that if that's true, then obviously, with our five-colored map over here, we are not going to be able to fill up the entire checkerboard of a whole field without getting two species of different types next to each other. Obviously, we've got each aruga, it's got five different types of species. So you put the next aruga next to it, even if you're using the same five, you're going to end up bumping into a different species next to the aruga next door, correct? Somewhere.
You mean with a six-step overlay of the two?
Yes, you've got six, and you've got six, and six, and six. Take a look at the map without looking at the details of the map, and the Rashi over here on Amud Aleph and Pehe. And you see, forget about the way that he has it laid out. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But if you, each one of those squares is an aruga fisha by shisha, and you've got supposedly, again, these are very poorly drawn maps, but supposedly you've got this line of one tefach around the aruga. And Omer Rabbi Zervi Tevi Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, my time at Rabbi Yehuda, Tehtiv Ishkita Barak Lecha Kegan Hayarak, that you will water, saying how great now Eretz Yisrael is compared to Eretz Yisrael, where you have to go around and schlep water all over because it uses artificial irrigation. So you need to water your fields the way you would water a vegetable garden. Ah, but a vegetable garden needs beraglicha, like I need to know. But I do that on my feet as opposed to walking on my nose. I mean, what do I need beraglicha to tell me? That the point over here is that just like a regal is a tefach, a gvul is also a tefach, which gives you two tefachim between one aruga and the next. But the problem is that two tefachim is not enough. We said you need a minimum of three tefachim between different species. This creates a tremendous problem in the way we've been understanding the sugya, because there should not be, really, anything like the description of the gvulot within the structure that we have. And indeed, it says Rav, Amar Rav, this whole issue is wrong. We're talking about an aruga b'churva sheninu. We are talking about an aruga in the middle of a backyard next to a swing set, not an aruga that's in the middle of a field that has other arugot around it. Therefore, the gvulot that you were referring to indeed are a necessary description of an aruga, agreed. However, we will see that the description of an aruga is not necessarily the well-defined shape of an aruga vis-a-vis kilayim, where arugot are next to each other, say maybe 100 of these, one next to the other in rows in a field, rows of arugot like this. That's not the point. You can't do that, because then you'd only have two tefachim between each one. What the purpose of defining the gvul of an aruga is, as we'll see later on, is that specific shapes that are important enough are given additional kulot when it comes to jutting into fields. So even though one of these arugot may jut into a field or have a field jut into it, such that you have a jagged edge of a field coming into another field with a different species in it, once it's large enough and well-defined enough, and that is an aruga 6x6 surrounded by a gvul of one additional tefach around it, that is chashev enough not to have to worry about kilayim when it abuts, not abuts straight along, but juts into a field. Less than that is a problem, because then we don't look at its shape as being important enough, and it becomes kilayim in the field. That we'll discuss later on. But do not make the mistake, says Rav, of thinking that when we gave this definition of an aruga with the gvulot, and we said the gvul is a tefach, that means you have a right to line these things up one after the other in rows, like Rashi has here, 9 of them lined up, or 90 of them lined up, however you want to do this. You can't line them up at all. You can't have one next to another one. For the simple reason, if you're only allowing one tefach of a gvul, then that would mean that the edges of each aruga are within two tefachim of each other. Right? And you can't have only two tefachim, you need a minimum of three tefachim. That is great. We'll see. Omar Rav aruga b'churva sheninu, because anything else would be a problem. Ask the Gemara, why is this a problem? Now, this is Rashi learns, it's not quite perfect in the language, but Rashi learns a brilliant shot. And that is, v'ha'ika makom kiranot. You always have the option of staggering the corners. So, if you take a look at the way that Rashi has created his picture, right there in the middle of the page of Rashi, the middle of the big lines of Rashi, you see that what he's done is he staggers the edges so that we start at the upper edge and we go down to within a tefach of what is next to it, starting on the lower edge. Which would mean that not only do you have two tefachim between each aruga, which is not properly, they did not have a concept of doing things according to a proper scale in the early days of printing, and that's why all of these maps are awful. But what is really we have over here is a full two tefachim between each one of these arugot. put together the two tefachim and an additional tefach on the north to the south or the east to the west, because these things are not coming close to each other. They're not abutting each other. You notice the distance between each line and the line next to it and the adjacent aruga? That additional space provides for sufficient distance between the edges of the different species in each field. Now, Tosafot doesn't like this shot for the simple reason that he says, which is that what Rashi seems to be doing is adding the square root of 2 twice to give him 2.8 in the distance of the 2 by 1. Because only one tefach north-south, 2 tefachim east-west, right? Or vice versa. You understand what I'm saying? But if you, but he says, but that isn't true, obviously. All you get is 2.24 is all that you're going to get, because you don't add square roots of 2. You're going to even get less proportionately than you would have had if you had just 2 diagonals. So, because of that, how can you use this to give me 3 tefachim? Don't you really need 3 tefachim? And because of that, this comes up with an entirely different explanation. Because the way Rashi's got the distance, obviously he's being very specific that you have a total of a tefach, a half a tefach here and a half a tefach there. Okay, fine, that's a problem. We can vary that a little bit. But there certainly are ways. That's all that the Gemara is asking. You have ways to stagger this so that you really could fill up the entire area without regard one to the other and never have 2 different species come within 3 tefachim of one another. Why then did Rav say, no, you mustn't ever have them adjacent to each other? After all, adjacent by definition is 2 tefachim apart because each aruga has its own gvul. Answers the Gemara, the people that learned in Rav's Beit Midrash, Amri Bei Rav, quoted their Rebbe Rav as saying, well, the Mishnah is talking about Bimamaliyat Akronot. You planted the whole side. You didn't stagger it. Well, what kind of crazy chat is that? I don't understand what you're asking. Why do it that way? Why not plant on the edges, on the outside, so they don't bump into each other? Don't fill it along the ends, in the middle. And that way you'll be able to have as many of these arugot as you want. I mean, why would Rav insist on claiming that the Mishnah is only referring to a case where you fill up the entire edge? Does that make sense? It seems very arbitrary. No, because they explained that according to Rav, we don't allow you to do that. Gezeira shema yamaleya takronot. We are afraid that you are going to actually do it the wrong way. Now the reason for this is that where you are planting one aruga, we're assuming that an aruga is something that you do at one time. You can't fill an entire field of these garden arugot at one time. It's going to take you a couple weeks of work. So let's say you spend your first day creating that first aruga, and you do it properly, and you plant all along the edges. Are we going to make a gezerah? Maybe you'll plant too far towards the middle. No, you see exactly what you're doing, and you know what you're doing. The problem is that the next day, when you come to do another aruga, you'll be concentrating on the other aruga without taking into consideration, but what happens now that I'm abutting the aruga I made yesterday? There we have a basis for a gezerah. To make a gezerah on one aruga, we're not going to make a gezerah that you'll do it wrong. We rely on your setting out to do it right. But as far as filling up an entire field with these things, there it's very easy to get confused. If you make your first one the way you would normally make a single aruga, if you start filling up a whole area like that, then you're never going to have 3 tefachim between the different species, and you're going to have kelayim all over the place. Says the Gemara, said, well, why in the world would it be a problem, even if you would do this? I mean, why is it any different? Lo yehei ela rosh tor yerek. Milot nan haya rosh tor yerek nichnas v'toch sadeh acher mutar mipneishin nir et sof sadeh. Look, isn't the whole idea over here that we are giving significance to the shape of the aruga? Isn't that the whole point? But once we give that significance to an aruga, we're saying it's a self-contained agricultural structure of 6x6, well known as a defined garden patch. Let me ask you something. You've got 2 fields next to each other. They are shaped in a strange way, which very often happens. As you drive along in your airplane, you see fields are not necessarily squares next to each other. It's got to match the terrain. Suppose one field is a diamond-shaped, basically, next to the field that's next to it. So what happens? You can only touch the tip of the diamond to the other field. You can't. You got to leave that whole area. Okay, there's a picture. diamond touches field. Is this what you got to do? Or are you allowed to invade the territory of another field with a diamond shape? Because of, there you go. Where do you go?
It's an aerial picture.
Yeah, aerial picture. There you go. Perfect. Nice aerial picture of a Rosh Tor. That's completely invasive of the other field. But because of the fact that each field is well-defined, it's not called Kilayim. Because remember, part of the idea of Kilayim is that there's an appearance of Irvuv. But once graphically it's constructed in a way that the eye doesn't see Irvuv, then even if you don't have literally a marker like a fence in between, it's not considered to be Irvuv. I thought the whole point of the Aruga, especially once you started talking about the Gvul around it, is to make it a well-defined agricultural object, which by definition cannot interfere with an adjacent agricultural point. Isn't that the whole nature of the idea? So then why would Rav say something so ridiculous? If the point of the Aruga is that it's constructed as a unit, then it won't interfere with another Aruga unit, right? Wrong, says Rav. Because Rav holds that Ein Rosh Tor ba'Aruga. There are different types of agricultural units. The Aruga functions as a garden unit, not as a field. And the point of a garden unit is that it's defined by its internal relationships, not its external relationships. Where you're talking about a field is so well and obvious to anybody, defined from the outside, that we will even allow the Rosh Tor and say that that's not considered to be a Kilayim because it looks like a completely different area. I mean, you're talking about an acre. I mean, it's big. I don't see any mixture at all. But when you're talking about it's a tiny garden patch, Pesach HaKol. You're talking about something about the size of this tabletop, right? So you're going to tell me this is so chashev that if one juts into the other, my eye doesn't perceive Irvuv? That's not what it's chashev for, says Rav. Its chashivas is for its internal construction, the way we have the one in the middle and the pieces along the side. That, yes, it functions as an aruga, and I don't see Irvuv inside of it, but I'm certainly going to see Irvuv if it bumps into others. Therefore, I say, we have a gezeira, we can't allow you to rely on this nice little staggered picture of Rashi. I mean, this is complex. These are complex rules. People are not reliable to follow these kind of complex rules. And therefore, I say, the heter of the mission of Aruga is a local garden patch, not a way to deal with a large area in which you have a lot of these patches next to each other. Then you got problems. Then you're going to have to separate them with three tefachim, which is not the natural shape of the Aruga. So, Ein Rosh Tor ba'Aruga. By the way, a Rosh Tor, the reason we refer to a triangle as a Rosh Tor, is either, according to most Rishonim, because it represents a primitive icon of the head of a shor, Rosh Tor. So if you'd want, of course, in the primitive mind, the shor of a cave painting, you imagine like a bison and so on, they're basically triangles. So we call that a Rosh Tor. According to the Rambam, we call it a Rosh Tor based on the pasuk of Torei Zahav Nazalav, which was one, and it's still very popular, a shape that you'd put together on a golden necklace. You take a lot of these triangles, and you have them going across, and it's a very nice shape for a necklace. That's Torei Zahav. And that's why we would call this a Rosh Tor, because it was a popular shape for jewelry. But in any event, it simply means a triangle jutting into another triangle. And that's why we wouldn't want to just say a triangle. Triangle where? We mean a triangle in a triangle, which is why the Rambam says that's the beauty of calling it a piece of jewelry, where one juts into the other. And that's what we're referring to. Classic Rambam description, right? Now, Shmuel argues on Rav. Shmuel says, no, there's no problem. You can have a whole field of these arugot, one next to the other, aruga, beina arugot, shaninu. But wait, Shmuel, you only have two tefachim between one and the other. Isn't that ta'arovet for Kilayim by definition, in which everything is being nourished by the same soil? So what do you do with the fact that they're called mit'arve behadare? Well, you stagger it, like Rashi said. Benoteh shura lekan v'shura lekan. Exactly the thing that Rav didn't want to do because of his gezeira, that maybe you'll be mamale the kronot. So Shmuel, I don't make a gezeira on this. It's very simple. We're obviously relying on people's agricultural abilities and to know enough of the simple halacha that if they're going to be making a whole field of this thing, they'll just be careful to make certain that they stagger it sufficiently, that there's enough space, including the diagonal, to give you three tefachim between two different species. What's the big deal? Omar Ula. Ula used to travel a lot between Eretz Yisrael and Babel. He would often bring back word of what the sugyas were that they raised in Eretz Yisrael. So he said, Bo b'ma'arava, you know, one issue that they questioned in Eretz Yisrael, it's a fascinating question. The idea over here has to do with the brain's ability to construct a vision of a particular shape. Now, the question is, when that shape is ripped apart by a superimposed image, does the brain maintain both pictures? And therefore, even if we would rip across your visual field by digging a deep furrow straight through this entire aruga, filling it with something else, and then it's like, oh, I don't even see the aruga. Or do we say by the very nature, if it's being a violation of the aruga, I discount it. I don't see it. I see a superimposed image. I see the aruga, and then I see a gash going across it, which doesn't belong there. So does the gash take away the din of the aruga because it inserts now a different species and it messes up the whole thing? Or can I ignore it because I still see the aruga? Brilliant question. See, hifkia. Hifkia means to rip across. It's the word that we use for ripping a piece of material. Ripping a thread. Afka, that was the name of the melech. Are you there, Moshe?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So now, if it was hifkia, telem echad al pnei kula. Suppose it ripped across the whole thing. Om Rav Sheshes, forget it. It's overs. But yirvuv ubitel et hashura. Of course, this is a play on words. Bitel et hashura is like ahava mevatel et hashura. People do out of love things that they would never normally do. Like waking up Moshe 10 times in the morning. So that, so this is this is a play on words. What it really means is it wrecks the shape of the straight lines because it was mafkia, but he's playing on the word. So it comes along the irvuv because we now have a mixture because it's inside the stellum. We've got another species, or even if it's one of these species, but it's not properly spaced anymore. It could be a sixth species. It wouldn't matter. I don't care what's in there. Forget it. Your aruga has been messed up. Rav Asi, and it's very likely the correct answer is Rav Asi, as we'll see later on. Omar, no. Ein iruvo mevatel et hashura. It's not true. The mixture of things that are planted in a clear graphic violation, since this telem is deep and it's clearly a gash and it doesn't belong there, it's a full tefach deep, it doesn't interfere with anything that's in the aruga. The aruga maintains its integrity, and what we see this is as an invasive species, so to speak, but it doesn't bother us. Now, that's a fascinating idea, and Ravina has a proof, he thinks, that it's wrong. Eitvei Ravina l'Ravash. Hanotea shtei shurot shel kishuin, shtei shurot shel diluin, shtei shurot shel pul hamitzrim. The guy's got a field, not an aruga, he's got a big field. And what he wants to do is he's going to plant two deep furrows, which are two of what happened over here that gashed across our poor aruga. But here he's dealing with some heavy-duty species. I mean, these are squash and pumpkin and pol, all of which are very, very heavy plants. There they grow with a lot of leaves. So here he needs a field. Now he wants to basically construct his field in such a way that he can graphically define well enough the different species so he doesn't have to worry about Yelayim by having furrows of different things in the same field. So one way of doing that is to have rows that are well-defined, and then we don't care that they're next to each other because we see them as different fields for all intents and purposes. So if he has two rows of each one of these things, then that's considered to be, in a field, a separation of each species from the other. But if he only has one row of kishuim, one row of diluim, one row of fulamitsu, then he's created a kelayim field, and then it's us. Now, according to what you just said, Ravasi, according to what you just said, you're saying that one furrow gashing through an aruga can't be done. The waves are splashing back and forth. We are almost about to capsize, and you are grabbing a Dremel in the middle? Derech onia belev yam. So you see from here that one furrow is not considered to be a sufficient indication of a separate area that doesn't interfere with other areas. So in the same way, it's not good enough to have one furrow in a field of pumpkin to put it next to Pola Mitzri. You shouldn't be allowed to have pumpkin, one, whatever it is, I don't care if it's just some leeks or something, but you shouldn't have anything inside of the shura that's cutting across your aruga. Ah, did it ever occur to you that there was a reason why we talked about pumpkins and pole and so on? There's a special meaning to the choice of species that we discussed over here. These are heavy-duty Kalayan species because shiny acha the ika sharaka. What you have over here is a lot of mixing and extended leaf growth. If you only have one shura, all you see is a mix and a mess of different leaves growing into each other. How are you going to have enough of a graphical description that says, oh, clearly this area is polamitsu? You don't see any area of polamitsu. All the leaves get mixed into each other. So there, in Okinami, you don't have a graphic description with one shura. But that's what we're talking about over here. We're talking about just the question of the gash across, not any mixing of leaves. Therefore, we are set. And it's not a problem, says Rav Ashi. Now, so far, we have been treading very gingerly in our aruga. And basically, what we've had is a little tiny plant in the middle that we've carefully kept three tvachim from the outer edges, which only gives us one plant. I mean, we're not making very good use of this land. You know, it's all very nice to have a kunz to get five different species in there, but come on, man, I'd like to plant something here, not have one lettuce in the middle. How do we do better? Omer of Kana, Omer of Yochanan, there's an easy way to do better. If you want to fill up the entire garden, now, of course, there's two ways of understanding this. The entire garden, meaning the aruga, or the entire garden, meaning the entire acre that itself is filled with arugot, let's say, like Shimon. Okay, that we'll see. But if you want to fill up your entire garden, you know what you do? You make each aruga, or the aruga, shisha al shisha. Yeah. You stay with the basic 6x6 shape that allows you five different zra'im without it being ipso facto kilayim. But you know what you do? You make a massive circle with a diameter of five tvach filled with lettuce in the middle. So what you do is you're ogel b'chamisha, leaving you on each side a half a tefach. Fill up the half a tefach with whatever you want, any other species. Now you've got five different species, almost the entire thing is filled. All you have is the little area between the top of the circle and the square in which that circle is inscribed, because the square is made out of other species, four other species. And you've got a tremendous land usage. They're using 95% of your land, and that's the way I would recommend doing it. What is this little plant in the middle? What is it? I mean, real men don't eat quiche. So therefore, we've got to actually make use of this. And the reason that I say, surprisingly, that this is mutter, and I would not have said Rabbi Yochanan, that you could plant two lettuces. You can't plant two lettuces. You can only plant 30 lettuces. Now, does that make sense? Yes. Makes perfectly good sense, because again, remember that there's two issues that we're balancing. The total mixture of actual shared nourishment and the graphic construct that separates between the species. Now, two lettuces are not graphically described. They're only described by the distance between this lettuce and the plants on either side. You can only plant one lettuce. There's no room for two, because then you don't have three talking in between, including the plant, obviously. However, once you've planted 30 lettuce in a circle, now try flying over that patch. Oh my gosh, beautiful. You've seen this, of course. It's very common since they started using the mechanized watering systems in circles. So you see these beautiful circles when you fly over them, obviously much, much bigger than what we're talking about here. But basically, they water in a circle. You pass by these fields, and there's a middle water source, and it's walking around the field, round and round, watering a circle, so that the green is a circular green. That itself is such a beautiful graphic image, says Rabbi Yochanan, that you can plant all the way to the edges. You got no problem. You fill up the whole darn thing, and you don't have an issue. What do you say about that? Now we don't have to worry about a single lettuce. But wait, didn't you say you could plant your whole garden? But the whole garden seems to be talking about a lot more than an aruga. You're talking about a whole field. But if you're really planting the areas between each one of these arugot, meaning you're planting the gvulot also, and then you've got real kalayim over here. I say you have direct contact between the different gvulot and what's next to them. I'm very confused. How can I do that? What about the baini-baini? I'm a devir of Yanni. Now, obviously, Rabbi, he didn't mean you can fill your whole garden, meaning the entire field. He meant you can utilize well each aruga, but naturally you don't have any option about the parts where they're actually going to come in contact, you'll still have to keep carefully to the rules that we described before, you know, the staggering and so on and so forth. You have to leave the middle parts empty. Rav Asher says, no, you don't. There is a solution. More graphics. Over here, the difference is, and anyone who has had his carpet laid by non-professional carpet layers knows exactly of what we speak. The direction of the warp and the weave is critical. If you try to match up a piece of carpet that is going north-south with a piece of carpet that's going east-west, even though it's exactly the same company and color and pattern, everything is perfect, it looks awful because it's clearly a violation of the way that the material is constructed. Well, the same thing is true in a field. Depending on how the rows are set up, are they going northeast or are they going southwest? So obviously, the distance between, we call that the warp, and the close plants, we'll call that the weave, or whatever. But the point is, it's obvious. I look at a field, I can tell which direction it's going. The rows are going either northeast or southwest or whatever. So what you do here is you simply stagger them. If every species is going in a different direction, how is anybody going to think that it's mixed? And what you need to do, therefore, im ha-yuzru im shti, zoran erev, if they were going in the direction of the warp, then the next piece should be going as the weave. If they were going in the orev, zoran shti, then everything would be fine. I guess we better, we've been going so long, I guess we better stop early. Well, not early in time, but early in space. But, after all, arugas give you all kinds of spatial possibilities. This teaches us, Gvul Shegavlu Rishonim Lo Tasig, other than the issues of Geneva that we're talking about, what would that refer to? Look, what's the meaning of Elo B'nei Seir HaChori Yoshvei Ha'aretz? I mean, really now, that I need to know that these guys were left behind on earth. That's what I mean. And they're also called the Chori because they could sniff the earth. They're called the Chivi because Amre Papa Shayatuamim et Haaretz Kechivia. Rav Acha bar Yaakov Amar, no, Chori is because it's just a nice way of saying they were thrown out of the country. Nasu b'nei Chorin b'nichseyem. Om Rav Asha, Aruga Tocha has to be Shisha, not including the Gvulot. Tanya Nam Yachi, Aruga Tocha Shisha. And what about the Gvuleha? Gvuleha Bekama? Get it not? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rokhav Kamali Rokhav Parsa, Omer Rabbi Zerav Itemer Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, my time with Rabbi Yehuda, Dechtiv Yishkita Barak Lecha Gagana Yarak, Ma Regal Tefach, Av Gvul Nami Tefach. Omer Rav, but don't make the mistake of thinking that by giving you the Gvulot, I mean you have a right to pack these into a field. We're talking about an Aruga, B'churva Sheninu. Why? I mean, you could stagger it by using the Makom HaKronot. Well, the Mishnah's not talking about where you're staggering it. It's talking about where you're Mamale the Kronot. Well, I mean, what makes you say that? Why not just Lizra Me'avroi, Vololim Le'megavoy, and then you can put as many of these as you want? Because Gzeira Shema Yemale et HaKronot. You know what the truth is? Even if you did, what's the problem? Is it worse than a Rosh Tor Yerek, since each shape is well defined to itself? Milot Znan Haya Rosh Tor Yerek Nichnas Letoch Sadeh Acher Mutar Mipnei Shenira Sof Sadeh. Yes, it'd be very nice if, in fact, it was a Sadeh, but Ein Rosh Tor just on an Aruga. Shmuel Amar? No, we're talking about an aruga, bein arugot shanino. How could you do that? How come it arve ve be'adari, you only have two tvachim between each species? You stagger it. B'notei shuralakan, shuralakan. Amar ulabo b'ma'arova. How about a superimposed image? So if kia telem echarap nekulamahu, on Rav Sheshes, oy va, boy, bo irvuv, ubitilat ashurat, all thing is kaput. Ravasi Omar, Ene Ruvo Mevatel Tashura. Eitve Ravina Le Ravashi, and what do you do about the fact that it says Befeirush that Anotet Shtei Shirot Shor Kishuim, Shtei Shirot Shor Diluim, Shtei Shirot Shor Fola Mitzri Mutar. But Shura Achat of Kishuim, Shura Achat Shor Diluim, and Shura Achat Shor Fola Mitzri is Asr, according to you. One shura, you claim, is so well defined that it doesn't bother our aruga. So why does it bother the sadek? Shani acha deyikashar acha. These particular species are bad news for kilayim. Omrav kanar maravi ochanan. Arotzel malot koginato yerek. You make an aruga shisha al shisha. Yeah, but you know what you do? You use the entire chamisha by planting in a circle. And then you can put anything you want on the four sides. But you said the whole thing? I mean, what about the gvulot in between? Well, I obviously didn't mean the whole thing, including the gvulot. I mean, he's referring to each one of the arugot, but he goes, Machriv ben abinayim, he didn't play it there. Ravash says, nah, there's a way to use the Bein Avinayim. Im ayuzer ro'in sheti, zor'an erev. Erev, zor'an sheti.